Welcome to The Cooler Ring, a podcast for manufacturing marketers brought to you by Cooler Partners. My name is Jeff White, and joining me today is Carmen Perry. Carmen, how are you doing, mate?
I am enthusiastic for today's podcast. Great to be recording with you today, sir.
Yeah, no, this is a really interesting topic.
Yeah, I think, you know, the world of manufacturing marketing, industrial marketing, et cetera, there's so much we talk about around having to, the kind of the dynamics of having to speak to very technical people and how it can be intimidating, I think, for people who aren't in the space or are just entering it, this notion that they have to be deeply technical and knowledgeable in order to market what it is they're being tasked with marketing. And I love the extra layer of challenge that today's guest is experiencing with all of this. So I think it's a cool thing to dive into.
Challenge and opportunity. Yeah. The neat way to talk about things. So joining us today is Jennifer McQuilkin. Jennifer is the Vice President, Corporate Communications at Enchanted Rock. Welcome to The Cooler Ring, Jennifer.
Thanks so much for having me.
Jennifer, I've got to ask, please tell our listeners, what is Enchanted Rock? It's a very different company name. So, and I'm guessing many people haven't heard of it, but so maybe tell us a little bit about the firm, if you would.
Oh, sure thing. So Enchanted Rock, we do on-site power generation. It's really what it boils down to. It's for companies, organizations, critical infrastructure. Really, they cannot afford to be without power. Even a blip could cost them millions of dollars or even lives.
Very cool. And how did you end up there, Jennifer? Tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, actually, it was a little bit by chance. I have a varied background. I have done everything from nonprofits to having my own agency to running a law firm and being a boat captain along the way. And yep, sometimes people always think about, oh, what's the next step in my career ladder? I don't think I'm one of those people that ever was like, oh, I'm going to achieve this. I'm kind of like, oh, this looks really interesting. I'm going to go do that for a little while. That's kind of how I found Enchanted Rock. I had been at Cummins, managing their marketing communications globally for their marine and oil and gas divisions. And Enchanted Rock came up, and it was an opportunity to get in with a smaller company, be able to make a difference. And I believe in what they sell.
I think we should just derail this entire thing and talk about what being a boat captain is like.
Oh, look, I would be more than happy to talk about boats all day long.
This is the thing about people who are into boats, Jeff. If you open that door, they're walking through it.
Yeah, this is like me and bikes. I get it. But you can't be a bike captain. It just sounds lame.
No, it doesn't really work the same way.
Jennifer, tell us about the core offering and the core product, because it is really unique the way that that product is brought to market and also kind of how it works.
I could boil it down to, we have basically a single natural gas generator, about 500 kilowatts. And that is it. We do end-to-end services. So we do everything from EPC to O&M, the whole life cycle of what a customer would need. But at the end of the day, it is the ERT 500 is our current offering. And we do have a couple minor variations of it depending on emissions packages, but generally it is one generator and we serve all of our customers through that platform.
So you combine them together basically when you need a more generating capacity, et cetera.
We do. So they're smaller than a diesel. If you're thinking about like a diesel generator, it's 1 megawatt, it's a certain amount of size. You know, ours are a little bit smaller, but like you said, we actually combine them together. And that was one of the challenges that we were facing, is that our generator is not what you would traditionally think is of a diesel generator when you're speccing out, you know, backup power for like a hospital system.
Right. And there's so many use cases for this, and that's, I guess, at the crux of what we're talking about here is the notion that Enchanted Rock needs to serve multiple verticals, multiple use cases, speak to different buyer personas and different ICPs, and they have to do it all basically with one product.
Yeah. At the core, though, when you boil it down, it's really truly about providing that reliable power that someone needs. And then from there, you start branching off. You say, oh, okay, hospital needs about, it depends, maybe a 1.5 megawatt system, maybe up to 5, depending on the hospital system. And you say, okay, what they're looking for is to replace their diesel generators or to wrap around their diesel. They're looking for reliability. Again, that's what everyone is looking for. Is the power going to be there when we need it? But they want something that's quiet. And they want something that has clean local emissions, because a lot of times these generators are in a parking lot of a hospital. And, you know, people are walking around, and obviously healthcare. I don't want to be healthy.
So is that, in a nutshell, how you think about the messaging challenge, is to say, when faced with this, start from a core that kind of appeals to all use cases, and then find basically the nuance and nuggets along the way to help shape up the offering for, to make it more vertically centric, I suppose, or use case centric?
Well, you just put that in way better words than I've ever put it as to how I've approached my messaging. So thank you. You've just made my life easier. But yeah, that is really what it boils down to. What is that common thing, the couple key, very high level messaging that we can use across all verticals? We can use it with different audiences, whether it's consumers or community, engineers. And then we start looking at some of the more specific. So for example, we have community microgrids. We've got one in Houston. It's a 500 kilowatt. It's just one generator. They needed resiliency during hurricanes so that this neighborhood would have a place to go to be able to have AC, water, charge their devices. They had a disproportionate amount of power outages as compared to some of the other neighboring communities. So they saw a great need for that. And we have one up in Bronzeville as well that needed to appeal to the community. That's a community outside of south side of Chicago. And again, they had disproportionate power outages, and they wanted something that's going to be able to be there, be reliable, and turn on. So, you know, those are having to appeal to community members as well. It's not just an engineer, a CEO, a CFO, or a sustainability person.
And part of the messaging with this, depending on the user of it, I guess, is this notion that not only can it provide power and quickly, but you're also able to kind of feed that back into the grid so that it compensates the user for the purchase, I guess. Is that accurate?
It is. It's really what is now becoming popular and known as flexible capacity. So what we've been able to do, and some of the reason why we were even founded, was to find a way to provide resiliency, which is what we were originally designed to do, for customers who perhaps could not afford the level of resiliency that they needed. So we ended up with what are dual-purpose microgrids. So not only can they provide backup power to the host facility, so that could be, like I said, a hospital, a water treatment plant, it could be a manufacturing facility, really anyone. And at the same time, if you don't need backup power, what you can do is you can basically flip the switch, and instead it provides power back to the grid. That helps flatten out some of the peaks and demands down in Houston and Texas in general with ERCOT. You know, they have some pretty high demand during the summer and now during the winter as well. And so when you're able to run your generators and feed the power back to the grid, that helps lower the cost for everyone involved.
I'm going to disclose that while I worked for a power utility, I did not have anything to do with the generation of power.
That's for the best.
I was a cost center. So I'm going to be well out of my technical depth here, and the question may not make any sense at all. But I guess I'm thinking of other examples where one product has to appeal to a wide variety of use cases. And sometimes it's like, the product is more thought of to be a natural fit for one use case than the other. Of course, everybody's used small natural gas powered generators for X, but never for Y, and now you're trying to sell it to me for Y. Have we run into any of that where your technology or approach is thought to be a better natural fit by the prospect in one vertical versus the other? And I just wonder how you've addressed it with messaging.
I don't really know if it's necessarily seen as a more natural fit in some areas, but we have had to adjust the messaging. So when you're looking at data centers right now, you know, what they're looking for is power. How quickly can I get it and how much can I get? I need to be online 18 months. The grid is like, whoa, we can't do that. You can have it in 3 to 5, maybe 7 years. And so they're looking for a solution that could bring them online a lot sooner. And we call that our bridge power solution. So while there may not be like one natural fit that we've really been honed into, we've had this amazing opportunity that we can see the needs coming of what else we could use our generators for. And we're trying to get out in front of that and be ready for those next waves.
And you mentioned this bridge power solution. I think you've talked about some different naming conventions previous in the conversation. Is that a key part of this messaging approach as well, is to basically bundle the product with a custom level of service or customized types of service and applications for a specific use case and just call it something different, like bridge power solution?
We do. It's back to that core generator. So we can package it into bridge power solutions. Those are for utilities, data centers, manufacturers, and other large load users. We package it into the flexible capacity. So that's where backup power and grid support. And then we also just have standby backup power as an option as well, because not every utility has the opportunity for market participation.
I guess I think you mentioned it's the, do I get it right with the GRT 500? Is that correct?
ERT. ERT for Enchanted Rock, yes.
That would have been.
It's okay. You know what? We have an easier product name. It's called Rock Block.
Well, people need to understand that that's just a result of my absolutely poor writing making a G look like an E when you were speaking earlier, but never.
That's really impressive, by the way. I don't think I've confused an E and a G before myself.
I appreciate you thinking it's impressive. But you were saying it's named Rock Block.
Yes. So what we've realized recently is that because our generator is smaller, and when you go to a data center, you're like, wow, you need 200 generators. In their head, they're thinking, oh gosh, we need 200 diesel-sized generators for that. Whereas our 200 generators actually are a lot smaller than those. So what we did is we packaged it into same generator, just called Rock Block. And we have options from 1.5 to 3.5 megawatts. And those are positioned as a one-for-one diesel replacement. So rather than saying, I need 200 generators, we can now say, you need 50 Rock Blocks with four gens each, so 2 megawatt ones, or something similar along those lines. And then that's a lot more receptive to people, because when they see that you need 200, actually we have a customer soon that's going to need 800 generators. You say 800 generators, their eyes get really, really big and you lose them. So we packaged it into Rock Block. And so all of the testing, all of the specs, everything like that are equivalent to that diesel generator or better. And it's not just taking one generator and putting a bunch out there necessarily. It's we've tested these blocks and that they perform how they should.
And just to give our listeners a sense of it, when you say, it's much smaller than a diesel generator, how big would a 1.5 megawatt capable diesel generator be versus the Rock Block? I just want to understand the visual difference.
For a 1.5, I think an easy way to think about it is a 1.5 megawatt generator for diesel is our 1.5 megawatt Rock Block, but is actually three of our generators because ours are only 500 kilowatts. I know it's a little bit of math, and I understand some marketing people and comms people, we shy away from as much math as we can, but trying to figure out a good way to explain the calculations here. You could tell some engineers were behind me in putting this all together.
So this may be a bit naive, but wouldn't there be some benefits to that in terms of redundancy that wouldn't be offered with the 1.5 diesel generator alternative?
There is, because if one of our three gens for some reason is offline, it could be for maintenance, it could be down, things happen, you still have two generators. So you can actually still pull 1 megawatt, or you can build in that redundancy. If you know that you without a doubt are going to need that 1.5 megawatt, you simply upsize it to 2 megawatt of our system. You have three gens running at any one time. One can come offline, another one kicks in automatically. That's big for data centers and for others, again, who they just can't afford to lose the power.
Yeah, that makes total sense to me. And it's a really interesting thing, because it's just this recognition that the sales conversation shuts down when we talk about it through the tradition, using the traditional language. So we have to alter the language in order to be almost invited into the conversation, in order to open their mind up to how this can work. But then eventually we actually do want to tell them, by the way, like, this is how it works. So because there's some strong benefits in the redundancy that it offers and things of that nature, but they have to be ready to hear that. And And it's what I love about this is just the choice of how you talk about it is what is tilling the soil, I guess, for them to be able to hear it. It's fascinating.
I think that's key. You know, anytime you're trying to speak to a customer, you have to understand what they're looking for, what's their language, and you have to see when they start zoning out. When you say 100 generators, they're like, whoop, nope, never mind, we're out of this conversation. So you really had to find a way to like just get past that first point, because if that's what the first thing they hear is, oh, it's going to be this many generators for that size site, there has to be another way around it. And so that's how we came up with RockBlock.
Well, Jennifer, I will tell you, it may be it may be obvious that to you that customers start reacting like that, that something needs to change. But I bet an awful lot of people would just keep beating their head against that wall and trying to communicate the benefit of having 100 generators. Right? They wouldn't see the difference that happens when you change the name.
These go to 11.
Everybody that has not seen Spinal Tap listening to the podcast right now is like, what?
How closely integrated are you in terms of working on the messaging with your sales team?
We're really closely aligned at Shinrock. We're not a big company. We're only about 300 people right now and growing. In case anyone's looking for a new role, come check us out. But we are very closely aligned with our sales teams. We just, for example, we have every other week, we have a marketing communications tag up with all of our sales teams for each vertical. And we understand what they're hearing from the marketplace. We let them know what we're seeing and we have a good open discussion. So really, it's a two-way street, because the sales team and others are out there and they're hearing things that perhaps we're not hearing where we are. But at the same time, we're seeing other things and trends and macro level that we need to be aware of for the future. And they can tell us what the hospital said today to them. And that's all good intel that we can take, use, figure out a way around whatever they're hearing, or, oh, that's a point that is resonating with them. Okay, let's do some more about that. Or education too. You know, we do have natural gas generators. A lot of people don't understand the difference between natural gas and diesel, and why does it make a difference, and how does renewables come into play? You know, there's no one energy or fuel of the future. And so also trying to make sure that people understand why you would use something in a certain case and what the benefits are is really key to our marketing and comms team.
That must have been a huge challenge over the last year or so. Just, I feel like the conversation around sustainability, the conversation has just changed. I think the political dynamic, both in the U.S., but I mean, that spreads across the world. I feel like it's altered the value that customers potentially see in more environmentally sensitive solutions. And it's just altered how we've had to talk about things. Has that been a big impact at Enchanted Rock? Have you noticed that you're maybe not putting sustainability and more pro-environmental messaging in the window as same as you used to? Or maybe just customers aren't demanding it as much? I'm curious.
What we're seeing with some of our customers is that it's becoming lower on their requirements list. They still want it, but they're not going to want it at the expense of getting the power that they need. And I'm thinking specifically of data centers for this one. They need power, they need it now. They still want the cleaner option because they want to be part of the community. It'll help them get, you know, across certain hurdles and so forth. There's air permits that need to be obtained. So there are reasons to look at it, but I don't think it's as much sustainability as it is cleaner.
Hmm.
It's not as much of an ESG conversation, perhaps, as it used to be. So we're seeing that that's dropped down a little bit in their requirements list. It's a nice to have. They would love to if they can, but at the same time, they need to keep their businesses operating.
I think there's some interesting learnings in that for an awful lot of manufacturers. And not that we should begin to shy away from, you know, things that are related to climate change and all of that, but maybe just to not completely eschew it either. You know, like, you don't want to totally get rid of the benefits, because at some point it's going to become important again, I think. And, you know, if we completely walk away from that, it's going to be harder to restart it.
I think it's really people taking a whole look at their portfolio and how can they plan for whatever the fuel of the future is. So, you know, a lot of people talk about small nuclear reactors coming online, you know, maybe 2030, maybe further out, but that's not a solution for today. You look at some of the renewables. they're great for certain uses. And I live in a place where we have wind farms and solar farms up the road, little farm community here. But at the same time, they can't provide 100% of the power that's needed. You know, batteries also play a role. They do a great stopgap. They can, you know, 2 to 4 hours. But then there's those long duration tail events that, you know, resiliency and so forth. I mean, during Hurricane Beryl last year, that was July 2024, we ran a couple of our sites for 2 weeks straight off of our generators. And, you know, solar batteries, they don't have that capability right now. Even diesel doesn't have that capability. There is no way to refuel a large data center for 2 weeks straight if you're looking at, you know, 500 megawatts. The logistics and everything else, it just doesn't math.
What I find interesting about this conversation, in addition to the varied messaging, is just this notion on sustainability and just how it would rub so many marketers the wrong way, who tend to be oftentimes, maybe sometimes, a bit more of the progressive or lefty voices in their organizations, particularly in industrials and manufacturing organizations. And it's like, you know, I really urge people listening to say, you've got to embrace this frosted mini wheat kind of thing. Like, it can be frosted on one side and sensible business on the other. I don't know. I mean, to Jeff's point, learning how to talk about these kinds of things through a business benefit lens and an ROI lens, not just a ESG lens, is critical for, I mean, it's like, it's not like climate change isn't important just because the political conversation has changed, but it does mean that as marketers, I think it's incumbent upon us to talk about it in a different way. We have to find another way in. If we don't, who else is going to, right?
I think that's part of where marketing and communications really comes into play too, is keeping a pulse on what else is happening out there. What are those macro trends? What are other people doing? What are they saying? Do you start seeing a little bit less sustainability on your perhaps competitors' websites? I mean, no shame in going out and seeing what they're saying too. You got to know what's out there. Not completely wiping it, but maybe you need to minimize it and focus on some other key attribute to this point. And then you know what? In a couple of years, if things shift, you just move them right back up that list.
Yeah, and recognizing along the way, if you were too biased in one way or the other personally, and you let that get into your work too much, you may not even see the opportunities or the changes that are afoot.
It's almost like it's more sustainable messaging to be able to talk about it in a way that is more business focused, as opposed to it being about, you know, almost in an emptier way, that kind of, you know, where we're trying to apply a green filter to everything, you know, especially as we see with some of the packaging companies that we work with, you know, or that we've interviewed on this show, even. Jennifer, I want to go in a slightly different direction for maybe just a moment. And you've had this incredibly varied career, you know, where, you know, the boat captain thing. You also own a hobby marina, I believe you mentioned before, and, you know, agency side and working with a law firm and all of those different things. How do you think that experience has shaped how you think about marketing now? And what do you think younger marketers should think about when they're kind of choosing their career path a bit, you know, if they're trying to get towards something, you know, towards a position like you're in right now with a, you know, a cool startup-esque company that's in an industry that's in a growth mode, you know, somebody wants to get there, but, you know, they're doing other things. Like, do you think that your varied path helped you get there? And do you have any advice for younger marketers?
I do think that my untraditional career path has helped. Because you were just talking about understanding, you know, the business and how to communicate. And I think that's one of the things that I learned along the way, is understanding the business impact of everything that goes on. You know, every decision, you mentioned I own a hobby marina, or basically I have a marina in my front yard. I have to, at the end of the day, you know, make the balance sheet work. I mean, I would love to be as green as possible. I would love to have certain offerings, but, you know, you got to balance. There's a balance that you need to find. With everything. And I think having been able to be in some of these roles along the way taught me a lot. I used to be a regional communications officer for the American Red Cross. It taught me a lot of empathy, because I was out and I responded to disasters, and being able to see where people were coming from and be able to communicate with them in that time, and also at the same time, be able to move quickly, because you don't necessarily always have 100% of the info you want to be able to make a decision to move on it, especially during a crisis or, you know, a large-scale natural disaster like we used to do there. So I do think that take an adventure, try something out. And I think one of the things I look for in my team is someone that wants to step up and take an opportunity. They're going to take charge. They want to try something out. They're going to volunteer and they're gonna be like, oh, I want to try that. It's okay if it doesn't work out in the end, but at least put it out there. Try to solve a new problem that comes up. And that's another thing too. A lot of problem solving has to occur in our daily lives and in marketing. And I think being able to solve that problem and like go out and almost have a journalistic mindset at times, go and dig it out, ask the questions, understand it. We do work, a lot of manufacturing is very technical, as you were saying. You know, we work with a lot of engineers. They are more than willing, I have found, well, most of them, to sit down and, you know, explain something to you and make sure that you have a good understanding of it, because then you need to go and translate that to someone else in your material. So I know it's a little bit roundabout of a way, but those are a couple of things I learned.
Yeah, it's a really healthy advice, Jennifer. I'm thinking about the people that I've worked with over my career that maybe really stand out. And it's those people that embrace the unknown a little bit more and are willing to dive in and figure things out and bring a different problem-solving lens along the way. And you know, throwing yourself into some unpredictable or different work experiences over a career help you develop that skill set, I would think. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been interesting. Like, I understand some people, you know, perhaps want a more traditional career path than I've taken. But I mean, I've had some ups and downs along the way. But now that I look back, I'm like, wow, that was really cool. I got to do that. I got to run a law firm. It's very random along the way. I was hired to do some marketing for them and then ended up running the whole thing for a while. And I was like, oh, okay, sure. So I mean, benefits, accounting, finance, I got to learn a whole lot about a lot of different things in a role like that and be able to take those elsewhere as I've, you know, moved on in my life.
This is the oddest thing. Jeff and I actually know an agency owner here in Halifax, Nova Scotia. He owned a small digital agency, and he sold his agency and then ended up getting hired on as a law firm, at a law firm to be CEO after running the agency, because he built their website. And that's how they knew him.
That's pretty much what I did. I built a website. I helped him with a new logo. And suddenly I was running this law firm. It was like, okay.
There's two of you in North America. If we can find like three more, we'll have quorum here or something. We can at least have a basketball team.
Now, is he also recovering type A? Because working at a law firm, I used to be a type A. And I was like, wow, nope. That is not how I'm going to live my life. So I call myself a recovering type A. I have moments, but I'm not as like I used to be.
Jeff knows this unnamed person better than
I. He's a lot more chill now than he was running his agency. I'll say that. He was never a super type A, not quite like me.
All right. Well, Jennifer, this has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much for sharing your journey with us. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've been enjoying the conversation. And like I said, I'm more than happy you ever want to talk about boats and marinas. I am your girl for tugboats. I'm a big fan of those.
Thanks.
Or generators, of course.
Generators, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Got to get back
Can't
to the company
that
thing.
Part.
Got to get back to the corporate thing. Yeah.
Right.
Boat sales.
Thanks again, Jennifer.